Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening. Welcome back to another week of the Human Experience. And we'd like to thank all of our audience for joining us again. And just like to say, how are you, Doctor?
Oh, I'm doing great, Brother Yanni. Having a great visit with my daughter here in Maryland and enjoying the show today. Glad I could be on. Thank you.
Yeah, absolutely. And we're so pleased to hear that you're okay and live and well, and sure the audience is anticipating some of the, you know, and last week, how are you, Brother Lawrence?
I'm blessed, Brother. How are you?
Absolutely great. Last week, we finished up talking about, again, things in our community. We're just having a recap of all the things that we've covered in the shows. Last week, we finished with dealing with parenting and life skills, and even touched on health, how all of that, all families benefit in some form or fashion. We look at our how this affects our thoughts, our emotions, life skills, and your health plays a vital part, as we all know. Doctor, let you start off. How important is parenting and life skills and health and dealing with the problems in our community all the way around from our religious perspective and parenting and life skills and most importantly, the foods and our health?
Well, Brother Yanni, like, as you know, just the whole notion of how our lives are affected when our health is not up to par, and what determines the health of us as individuals, as parents, as families, is really determined by our lifestyle, and you mix parenting in with that, and here again, we have an opportunity to talk about the interrelated nature of all the things that are around us. Like, for instance, if we would look around us, we see the moving out of our people from various neighborhoods, it's called gentrification, but the neighborhoods are ran down. The neighborhoods are the sewers, the street lights, there are really many, many vacant buildings standing in decay, open spaces where burnout cars, things on the street, garbage and everything. And the whole point is that this is a two-way street. It affects our outlook on life. It affects our mental health. But we know from the research and from the science that poverty is the number one cause of mental illness among African Americans and other minority groups on the margin line economically in this country. So what we're saying is something very specific here, particularly for parents. If parents cannot provide for their children, this often leads to particularly men just walking away from the situation. It is a sad but true reality that our women have to face, that the men can't face it emotionally, psychologically, mentally, spiritually, every day, not being able to provide for their family at home. They leave. Now, I'm not justifying that. I'm saying this is the reality. But if you go back to the mental health and the physical health of our families, they are both so interrelated together and interrelated and so close together that without money and without a means to provide for our families, the health suffers, and therefore the mental health and spiritual well-being of the family suffers, and the life skills that are necessary to get us out of that situation are often not available to us simply because our schools don't have the laboratories, they don't have the libraries, they don't have the computer labs, they don't have the teachers. And so this is a vicious cycle that we're in, and we can't get out. But it's going to take a different attitude on our part. And it's like Malcolm X says that, and Malcolm X said this, but Malcolm X was saying it in a way that he wanted our people to get up, wake up, and start to do for self. And he says, we live in ran-down neighborhoods, but we run them down. And in one way, that is true. We do run our neighborhoods down. Now, I want to talk about one basic solution, and we've talked about this, Brother Lawrence, you, myself, our guests have spoken on this so often. We need to join together in our communities and get cleanup committees, remove the cars. We need to get the blight out of our communities. We need to have every weekend one home, one church, one school need to open the space so that we can teach our children from Friday evening to Sunday evening about who they are, their real history, their real ancient history, their real modern history, their real present-day history about how great they are. Because we're not going to talk our way out of this. We're going to talk to bring our ideas and our vision to the surface, but we're going to join hands and work and do things together, not just on Martin Luther King Day, but every weekend we're going to designate a home, a church, a library, a school in our neighborhood where we can congregate and teach our children their heritage. Because, you know, tomorrow's Martin Luther King Day, many children have no idea who this man was, what the movement was like that produced this man, who the people were, these hundreds and hundreds and millions of people who marched and sang and died and went to jail and whose lives were totally ruined. So we could come to this? No, that's not why the movement existed. It existed to empower us. And I think that if we're going to have good health, we have to empower ourselves through our lifestyle, and the parents have to take control of their families. It's your family, and it's rightfully your responsibility, I say.
I should give thanks. I want to say, Brother, first of all, I give honor to the elder. It's been a minute since I hear his voice, and it's a blessing to hear it. I want to also give thanks for Dr. King and all the effort that he has given to us, for the sacrifice that he has made for us to continue, and that we take very seriously the work that we have to continue. Because the condition has changed. We might be riding on the bus, a certain location on the bus, but we still have not had the economic transformation that's needed. That's some of the reason why our community is as it is. We don't have any overall love for where we're staying. We always are getting ready to leave from one place to the next. We got to move, and if the rent can't pay, we have to move. All the different issues, so we don't have to plant any seeds plant any long-term decision that we're going to be here for a while. So let's build a community. I wanted
they
to
had a question that they had a question that came over, and
yes,
this individual is from Blog Talk Radio. Thank you for your question. I think that this would be a hard feat for this to because of our religious situation in our community. This is the first thing that we must come together and confront all of the lies that have been told. I think that until we face this, then we will be able to move to another level. Thank you for your question.
Go ahead.
Hello?
Yes, go ahead.
Well, this evening.
Good, sister. How are you doing, our sister? How are you doing?
I'm doing well.
Great to hear your voice tonight.
Thank you so much. I'm just kind of chiming in. I'm hearing what you all are saying. I want to make sure that I heard correctly. We're talking about the family structure. Is that correct?
Absolutely. That was the first question. Go ahead.
Okay. And so I just wanted to make a couple of points and maybe a couple of suggestions coming from a personal and a godly perspective. The first thing I wanted to look at is the family structure as it has been damaged through slavery. And as we look at what has happened to the African-American family structure through slavery, our men are out of the home. I mean, I'm not speaking about, of course, every African-American home, but the majority of them, that is the case. We have the highest divorce rate currently now. And what I've done, I'm a divorcee, so I'm not going to sit here and point finger and act like it hasn't happened in my own home. But what I have done is try to save face with my child and my ex-husband is I try to be very cordial with him. Making it very convenient for him to spend time with the kid. I don't try to cause any arguments. I just try to make it cordial with him. And if we as Black women could try to do that as far as the family structure.
Absolutely.
And try to extend that family structure, because, you know, my ex-husband has a female friend. I'm very cordial with her, you know, because I know my son has to go over there, and I don't want her to feel any stress coming from the former relationship. I want her to be comfortable. And so a lot of times this is very difficult for Black women to handle when they're coming out of relationships. So, you know, I just being mindful of those things, I think that would be good for us. Working in the school system, I've noticed that we're losing the discipline of our kids in the school system. And I always believe that discipline starts at home. And if we discipline our children at home, then that discipline should extend the school system. And what I've noticed working in the classroom is that a lot of students are not being disciplined at home, and so they come in with the same habits that they think that they can get away with those things at home. And so I'm a believer of the scripture. In Proverbs 13:24, it says to spare the rod and you hate your child. I know a lot of people like to say spoil your child, but when you read the scripture, it says you hate your child. But he who loves their child will discipline them diligently. And so it's not about physical discipline all the time, but we have to be consistent with our discipline. You know, we can't discipline you for one thing and the other thing that you do wrong, we just let you make it. We have to be consistent, and that consistency has to take place in the school system as well. You know, and the children need to know their limits, what they can and cannot do. The other thing I wanted to touch on was the extended family structure. When I was coming up, there was an extended family structure, and I heard the brother talking about coming together. The kids are out tomorrow. A lot of them are just going to be at home playing video games. There's no real community activities for them to do other than the parade and the few maybe jumping things or activities that they have. But our students who are maybe 11 to 17 years old, if they're not working, they really have no organized things to do inside of our community. They can go into other communities and find things to do. But for me, I mean, I look at empty buildings that maybe we could build a skating rink or different ideas like that, something for the students to do, boys and girls clubs in the community, something for them to do that's right there in their community that they can have access to. And so those were the ideas that I wanted to touch on and just share with you all this evening.
That's great. That's great. Doctor, you wanted to say something?
Absolutely. I commend the sister for taking the time and sharing her ideas with us. And I would also like to say to her and other like-minded women, each side of the family coin, mother and father, those who create the children, must honor the fact that at one time they cared enough about one another and felt close enough to one another that they could produce a child. And I think that we cannot walk away from that. And I commend her, because I don't mean this in a patronizing way, but I think that she is both an example and somewhat of an exception. I would hope that her model would serve to guide other women and men into a state of mind where we must be able to reconcile our differences, even though we're not together, even though we're no longer being intimate with one another, for the sake of our children, our families, and communities. I would also like to say the point that she made is such a good point about taking the vacant buildings in the communities and turning them into something. This is winter. The children can't go outside in most of the time in many of our communities. Let's think about taking a building and asking the carpenters and architects and plumbers and electricians to come over, and the building supply stores like a Home Depot to donate some material. If we can't do a skating rink, maybe we can do an area where we can teach gymnastics and boxing and karate and dance and other things. Maybe we can get some people to donate enough computers before they get rid of them, because they're too old and the new brand has just come in to set up a computer center. Let's do that. Okay, I want to make a point here. If you go to the local school board meetings, if you go to the PTO, PTA, or whatever those meetings are called where parents and teachers and student representatives are supposed to get together, you see the same people.
Mm-hmm.
What is happening to the 90% of the other parents and students? Where are they? We've got to get more people involved. And what that means is that we've got to start knocking on doors again. I would say,
you know, can I respond to that? Because
absolutely.
I'm an educator, and I often wonder that too when we have open house, and you may have 5 parents out of 150 parents that you teach to show up at open house. But as I was stating earlier about this family structure being destroyed, we and I'm not making excuses for our people, because we need to put more effort where our children are concerned. But if I'm working 2 jobs to pay the bills and open house starts at 6 o'clock and I don't get off until 7 and I'm tired, you know, it's difficult. So it makes it difficult. So, you know, if the schools could maybe do something on another day or maybe, you know, do some surveys and find out when these other parents can actually come in and make those visits to the school or participate in the PTA or maybe do some type of online. I mean, this is a technology-based time, and maybe they can do some video back and forth or communication or something of that nature. But it's a big problem, and we do need to look at some solutions for that.
Let me say that the part of the history, let's not forget that there's been a conscious effort in paid by the school itself to exclude the parents from actively participating, because that's part of the social motion to educate young Black and Latino and people of color children so that they could start have a collective potential for future. So there has been an effort by the school system itself to kind of become too busy and alienate the parents. You have to go through extreme background check. You have to go through his up and up. And the children need to be safe, but it's, if they're parents, they need to be able to come in to paint the school. That, I mean, you have to go through some serious stuff to come in to paint the school. You have to go through some stuff to go through to be able to come and, you know, make a contribution to figure out how to bring about some, you know, like build a swimming pool, you know, contribute towards bring about using that collective property for some of those activities that we're talking about. So children can spend more time there, more productive time, to bring in gymnastics, as the elders talk about. So I don't want to take away that the parents are not, you know, they don't have the strong will to stand up against that, but they've been beaten down and scarred to stay out.
Okay, the comment by Brother Lawrence, which we thank, and the sister, if you put them together, put the two comments together, and this is what we hear. The sister saying, we've got to be creative. We have to stop thinking that we are going to get a pass on this. We've got to come up to snuff and start using the technological, the electronic, the information that's available to us and swirling all around us. And we're in this sea of information and in this sea of gadgets. Reach out and get them, pull them together, and make sense out of them for our community. And what you're saying, Brother Lawrence, is so important. We cannot forget I think it's called the National Association of Teachers in 1973. In 1973, had an official part, a document that said that they do not need the parents in the schools.
Mm-hmm.
Now, until teachers understand that was the wedge that they were driving. The National Association of Classroom Teachers in their conference came out with that. They said that they knew how to run the schools, and the teachers, all they had to do was do what they were told. We know that that's a lie. We know that it is not true, but it is true for them. What's true for us is we've got to use what's available to us. Be creative. But don't forget that each time we attempt to bring ourselves to a point where we are empowering ourselves, empowering our teachers, empowering our ministers, empowering our own Black policemen and men and women, someone finds a way to make that a problem. They find a way to make it a problem to teach authentic, genuine African history. They find a way to make a problem that we have boys in our school that are completely ignored while girls are pampered too. I'm not making this up. We can go to a conference, and we are going to have a conference this summer if we get enough people who want it, so we can come out of that conference with a plan to do some of the things that we're saying. However, we must listen to ourselves and go out and do some of these things, because I think that if we miss the technological piece, if we miss the information piece, we're simply going to be out of touch. Our youth know the computers. They know the handheld apparatus very well. Get them together. Let them be creative, and we be creative. Let's build something that fits us, not what fits the National Association of Classroom Teachers, a union, or this or that, but our own individual communities have our own individual unique needs. Let's deal with that creatively, but let's take Brother Lawrence's advice. Let's look at the fact that there is a conspiracy, not a conspiracy that is hidden. It is an open conspiracy not to teach the history of non Anglo-European people in the schools. If you do, you will get talked to. If you continue to teach them, they will find a way to get you out. We know this. So let's be wise and let's be prudent, but let's do this because we can.
Right. And to emphasize or reemphasize that technological piece. Two things that I do when I have students who appear to be troublesome or maybe troublesome. One thing, I reach out to their parent. If the parent can't come up there, hey, do you have an email address? And if they say yes, I say, can you email me once a week? Just email me once a week and say, hey, how is he doing? And I will respond back, because I have 160-something kids this year, and I can't keep up with it. But if a parent emails me, I'm going to respond to them within 24 hours. Another thing I do is with the cell phone. If they don't have an email, do you have a cell phone? Can you text me once a week? Or if you need to text me more often than that, that's fine. And so that's two pieces that I use to keep in contact with my parents personally. And I would encourage other teachers, you know, if you are having some strong concerns or some strong issues with students, give the parents your cell phone number, get an email address from them, and ask them to be responsible for them child. Have them to contact you. Because we get lost in paperwork and lesson plans and all that stuff. But if a parent emails us or texts us, we'll be more apt to respond to them, you know?
Absolutely. Yes. Go ahead, Brother Lawrence.
No, go ahead, Elder.
I wanted to say how grateful and you know, how appreciative we are of this sister sharing these ideas with us, because each idea increases the skill, the tool set of the teachers, of the parents, because we were talking about life skills last week, and we're talking about life skills this week in health and the parenting. All of this is interrelated. We must use that term. We must start to see how this sister has got 100-odd students that she is responsible for. Can we get some people to say, hey, I tell you what, I'm going to bring an extra cell phone to you, or an extra tablet, which is devoted totally, so you can have that over there just to keep the names and of these cute students and their families. We need to see how interrelated it is, because like she said, that her relationship with her child's father is helping her maintain that family. Let's not just listen to listen. Let's listen to hear, to understand, to implement, to empower ourselves. The talking is over. This thing has heated up, and this thing meaning life, meaning our communities, meaning our churches, schools, meaning our families. We must be able to slow it down so that we can see the parts and how they're interrelated, instead of just focusing on one part, the school, the student in the back of the classroom that didn't get enough sleep last night. Let's see it all in context, see the parents, see the home. We can do this. I know that we can. I shake.
Yes, Elder. And also let me contribute that a long time ago I was an advocate for this issue of utilizing military personnel to kind of be in the school from junior high and high school. If we can get those, particularly in the inner city, because that kind of militarized discipline, which means purposeful discipline, you know, rigorously organized and structured, will be a great help for our community, because our kids need that kind of discipline, and then they can be redirected. So that's something that they made a choice not to put in our school, but our kids really need it, because they're very high strung and high willed.
Absolutely. We have only a minute left. We're going to continue as we do our series on health and family. Hope all of you can join us next week. Hope all of you enjoyed the information shared today. Please go and discuss them with your children and see what you can come up with in your community. We thank all of you, and please join us next week. Thank all of the the ones who participated with us today. We thank you. Please join us again next week. Take care and have a great week.
You also, Mother. Be blessed. Be well, Elder.
You too. Thank you all.
You also.
All right.
Thank you.
Enjoy your MLS today. Everybody have a blessed week.
Yeah, be blessed.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.